say very briefly, for a person who doesn't need any introduction, that we know from Pirkei Avos that one of the most important midos for a Jew to have is having an ayin tov. And just to say, to go straight to the point, it's such a great privilege and a pleasure to have with us in the yeshiva someone who, for me, since I met him as a Shalvim parent a couple of years ago when Rav Avery, then Avery, now Rav Avery, Joel and Noam Joel learned in Shalvim. And then over the years, with all the different challenges that he faces in his leadership, a person for me who is the role model of an Ayin Tov, of always looking positively and always trying to find out how he can build, how he can add, how he can bring the community in every different position that he's been in to a better place. That's what he's interested in doing, and that's what he's successful at doing. And it's really a great honor for us to have with us President Richard Joel at Yeshiva Shalvim today. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Started to get nervous about having all these recorders when you give a shmooze at the yeshiva in Israel. It somehow ends up causing grief. What Rabbi Waxman didn't say to you is that I have the zechus of being his father's Talmud. That when his father was a little bit younger and before he was in training to be a great sociologist, he taught at MTA. And he was my Sunday Rebbe. And what I learned from him is Tehillim. And it's good because I've been saying Tehillim ever since, starting to learn the importance of it. But in fact, not only that, he lived in Yonkers at the time. I was an only child, and my father had just died. And it was just my mother and me. And every Sunday, he lived in Yonkers. He would come and pick me up and take me to MTA for school and bring me home. And he was just a very important person in my life at a very important time. I have to give Hakaras HaTov. But also Rev Waxman, both to my sons and to me, has really in so many ways personified what you know, which is what a warm and rigorous and focused and loving and supportive place this is, because not just of the Hanhala, but the Rabbeim who you get to learn Torah with and you get to learn life from, are just completely devoted and dedicated to you being all you can be. And that's just a remarkable thing. And I think, look, lots of the yeshivot in Israel are that way. I just see in this place, and I'm clearly nogea b'dover. And I have the zuchus of a very close and wonderful friendship with Rav Yamer. And I just feel that you are not just safe here, but you are launched here. You are launched forward. Okay, this isn't a place that tries to say, oh, the world is all bad, right? And here you are, and you're going to have the perfect year, or year and a half, 2 years, and then chaval, the rest of your life is b'di'eved. But this is really a place that says you have great things to do for the world, and with the world. And we're going to be a launching pad for you. And then we're going to launch you in the right way. I have to put in my ad, because I think it matters, but we're going to launch you, and we hope you go to YU. Because that's where you'll continue to grow. Because it doesn't end here. Okay? It hasn't begun here. I mean, you know, they don't get you here right after your mothers give birth. Right? You are shaped. And you're shaped in a way that has you decide to want to be here. There's some self-selection. And it continues. And it should continue to my having the zechus of being able to work for you. So I'm just, I'm really honored to be here. It's a privilege for me. Just a couple words of, not of introduction, but of disclosure. I've been president of Yeshiva University for 11 and a half years, which I think I calculated to be about 76 dog years. And it's an unbelievable privilege and an unbelievable challenge. Just to give you a sense of career path so that you won't try to actually have a career path, I'm a lawyer. I'm a recovering lawyer. I'm a graduate of NYU Law School. I was an assistant district attorney in the Bronx for almost 4 years in the 1970s when the Bronx was on fire. To give you a perspective, this year there will be something less than 400 homicides this year in New York City. In 1977, there were over 400 homicides in Bronx County alone. So, you know, very often, every couple of nights, I would have to be called to a crime scene. I was order in Law and Order, or maybe I was law in Law and Order. I'm not sure which one. But it was a very important experience in my life, and I knew I was going to spend my life as an attorney. So God heard that and laughed. And shortly after that, I was recruited to be associate dean and a professor of law at Cardozo Law School of Yeshiva University, not because I was a great legal scholar, but because they wanted someone from at Cardozo Law School who maybe could be okay at management. I did that for 8 years. I taught legal ethics to prove that I had a sense of humor. And then I was going to join a Wall Street law firm. By then, we had five children. I had been youth director in the Young Israel of Oceanside for 11 years during the same time, which actually was a lot of fun, and we loved Oceanside and had a great life. I thought it was time to make some money and continue to grow, all of which is very good, except out of the blue, I got a call from people who were recruiting. They'd been spending over 2 years looking for a new president for the Hillel Foundation, the place that runs Jewish life on campuses around the world. And someone had referred me to them. And I said, Hillel, I said, I wouldn't be caught dead when I was a student at Hillel. They said, yeah, we understand that. That's not bad. I said, you know, I'm not a rabbi. They said, oh, that's not bad. We've had enough rabbis. I said, you understand I'm Orthodox. They said, oh, well. So that would have been a problem. I said, where's Hillel based? They said, Washington. I said, well, I love Washington, but there's no way that I'm, you know, taking the family out of our community. We're very established there. And I went home and I told my wife, and she was very angry at me. And she told me that there were enough good Jewish lawyers and that there were things I had to do. And I said, but sweetheart, we're so happy here. We have a great life. She says, so how many people have one great life? We can have two. I said, you know, that's why I love you so much, and that's why you're so special, but no, I'm not going to do that. And then she used a word that I won't repeat to you, and she told me that I'm getting on an airplane and going for an interview. So I went on an airplane and went for an interview. And here's another great thing. If you don't want a job, right, your interview always goes well because you're not pressured and you're not trying to second-guess yourself. So I went for an interview. To my horror, they offered me the job. And it's literally true that Esther made me do it. Now, I have to confess that somewhere deep inside me, I thought, what a wonderful opportunity to take 250,000 Jews on the campuses of America and see if I could make their Yiddishkeit stronger. I didn't see it as a kirov job, but as a chizuk job in a real way. And we moved to Washington, and we spent 15 years doing a turnaround of the Hillel movement. I didn't realize it then. I spent 15 years building the competition. The only thing I knew absolutely in terms of what would be next, I mean, that was the great opportunity in my life. If there was anything I knew absolutely is that I would never be president of Yeshiva University, not being a Rav and not being a Gaon, certainly not that. I knew that wouldn't happen, and although we sent all of our kids to YU because we thought it was the only place. I was a big critic. There were things that were at YU that I didn't think should be there, and there were things that weren't at YU that I thought should be there. But afal pi chein, I thought there was no contest in terms of where our children should go. I watched as for two and a half years, there was a search process, and they kept having candidates, and they kept turning the candidates away, and I was counting my blessings. And then one day I got a call from someone who was on the board of trustees, who said that they wanted me to talk to them about Yeshiva University. I told them that they had called me 2 years ago, and I said no because I knew it would be a joke, and I'm not interested. And the person hounded me enough into a meeting. That's another mistake when they say just meet me for lunch. Okay, you don't say yes. Okay? And I met for lunch, and I said I wouldn't be a candidate, and they said we don't want you as a candidate. We want you to do due diligence, and then to become the president. This was in November. I said no, and I was elected on December 5th. After interesting things we can talk about once you're students at YU and you come for Shabbos. I would also tell you, and this is the end of the self-revelatory moments, so just to give me some standing to talk to you. We didn't know what to do, because I loved my work at Hillel. I did think that there was nowhere but here in terms of Yeshiva University. I thought it was a shining city on a hill. And although I had loved the work I did with the Jewish community on campus, basically the work on campus is for the 90% of the Jews who are not Dati, who are there on campus. And I did think that the students at Yeshiva were the ones who would shape the world. And that if I could have a chelek in their, in developing their learning and their sensitivity and their life direction, I firmly believed that it was these young people who were going to shape Yiddishkeit in the future. So I was really torn. So Esther and I had tickets to see the Broadway-bound revival of the play Man of La Mancha, which is about Don Quixote. And we were really torn up. It was very late November. But we went as a diversion to the National Theater in Washington, and we saw the show. And I'm one of these guys who has the playbill always open with my pen open in case there's a good line that's used that I could use. And at a certain point, the Don Quixote character says the following. He says, "Madness is seeing the world as it is and not as it ought to be. Madness is seeing the world as it is and not as it ought to be." I busily write it down. And then the theme music comes up. "To dream the impossible dream, to fight the unbeatable foe." Very nice. Play is over. We both walk out of the theater. Both of us have tears coming down our cheeks. And my lovely Ashes Chayil turns to me and says, "Richard, maybe we're supposed to do this." And that's how we decided. Honest to goodness, that's how we decided. And it's been 11 and a half relentless, challenging, unbelievably fulfilling and worthwhile years. So I guess my message to start is make sure you know exactly what you want to do with your life, write it down carefully, and then tear it out and throw it out. Because there are other hands at work than just ours. And Siyata Dishmaya is a major force. Now, please understand, I'm a university president. It doesn't mean you shouldn't have direction. And it doesn't mean you shouldn't have dreams and try to follow those dreams. And it doesn't mean you shouldn't discipline yourself in preparing yourselves. But I think don't ever say what I'm going to be is a lawyer. What you are going to be is a mensch and a ben Torah and a critical part of Jewish leadership in the world. And you might make your living by practicing law. So remember that when you think about what, you know, it's not so much about earning a living, it's about living a life and what that is. And I can't imagine you're doing anything better in preparation for that than what you're doing now. And it's critically important, and it will only reinforce your values. So several years ago, a professor at the University of Pennsylvania, who's also a famous Republican pollster named Frank Luntz, wrote a book. And the book was called What Americans Really Want. And in this book, he'd done several different random sample surveys. And he did one where he wanted to come up with the five things that Americans want most. The five things that Americans want most. And I found the answers very interesting and revealing. So now we have the audience participation part of the program. What are the five things that, according to the poll, Americans want most? Sir?
Love.
Oh, that's it. Anybody have a flower? Or we could sway. Very nice. Love. Okay. Yes. Excuse me. Home security. Money. Fulfillment. Anything else? Yes.
Respect.
Happiness. Okay. These are the top five. Okay. Survey says these are the top five. The first thing that they want is not money. It's more money. Well, that's a serious thought, so we'll talk about it in a minute. Number two, fewer hassles. What Americans want most? More money, fewer hassles. Number three, more options. More options. Number four, more time. And number five, no worries. Okay? More money, fewer hassles, more options, more time, no worries. So,
What's interesting to me, and I'm not using this as a straw man. I mean, these are interesting comments. It's interesting to me that they didn't say they want money, which is what you said. But they said more money. More money. Wherever they were on the thing, it was about more money. I mean, to what degree are we defining who we are by whether we get to have more? Not just money, not enough to feed the family or pay yeshiva bills. More. And is that an issue? And is that what we want most? Fewer hassles. Well, I don't know about you, but I agree with that. Hassles are they're all around us. They're built into life. I tell the story about, you know, when you go out now to buy a pair of scissors. So, you know, in the 18th century when I was growing up, you'd go into a hardware store and say, can I have a pair of scissors? They'd give you a pair of scissors. They'd put it in the bag. You'd buy it. Not now, because the scissor could be dangerous. So you go and get the scissors, and you've seen this. They're in these hard plastic containers to make sure you don't get hurt, right? You've seen these things, right? And you take home the scissors, and you want the scissors, and you look first for where's the opening in the plastic that you can pull it apart. You try to wedge it apart. Then you get frustrated and you start banging it on the table to see if it makes a little thing, right? You all know what's next. You look around, you make sure no one's there, and you bite it, right? To see if, and can't do it. Someone comes over and says, what's the problem? And I'm trying to open this. They say, well, why don't you use the scissors? I said, no, the scissors is in there. What do you mean, why don't I use the scissors? Right? It's just hassles. It's there for your own good, right? But everything is a struggle. I needn't even have to say that in this country. That nothing is straight. Everything, there are all these hassles, and it gets to you. So what Americans want, they want less hassles, more options. People think that everything is kind of programmed for them, and they want more choices. They want more choices, more time. Now that's so interesting, isn't it? More time. Well, all the surveys say that Americans at work are the most overworked people in the world, that they are consumed with work. The notion of simply a 40-hour work week and then they go home and watch a ball game, it doesn't happen. The other issue, of course, is that the notion of a one-income family. And to some degree, the women's revolution was used as a pretext to have the end of the one-income family in the United States. Everybody's working. Everybody's working all the time. Right? And people want more time. What they want to do with their time, they want to shop. Right, so they can spend their more money and have less hassles. But time is a big issue. Time is a big issue. And finally, no worries. No worries. I don't want worries. I just want it easy. Okay, I understand that. I understand that. Is that our big five? Is that your big five? Okay, I'll ask you, what do you want most? What do you want most? Hands? Oh, you can talk about what they want, but you don't want to talk to me about you. What you want? What do you want most? Yeah.
Clarity.
Clarity. Oh, you're in for trouble. A true dreamer. Clarity. Okay. What do you want most from life? Oh, guys, maybe I spoke too well about you. You don't think about that? Sir? Happiness. Okay. By the way, it's interesting they didn't say happiness. I could give you a hard time and ask you to define happiness, but we'll get there. Sir?
Religion.
Religion. That's what you want most. You should sing a spiritual or something. Give me that old time religion. Yes, sir?
Purpose.
Wholesome
family.
Wholesome family. Okay, purpose, wholesome family. Anything else? We covered it all? Have I intimidated you? Yes, sir.
Influence on others.
Influence on others. Interesting.
Success.
Success. Success. Hashem? You want Hashem. One is Hashem. One is Hashem. One is Hashem. You have Hashem. It's okay. Okay? Okay, interesting. Interesting, certainly, that you didn't overlap at all. You might want money, but it's not the top of your agenda, right? What about time? Do you have enough time? No, you don't have enough time. Wait, because you're looking for happiness. Clarity. You'll never have enough time. Look, the real issue, why do I even raise this for you? what is it we want? What is it we want? You are at such an unbelievably enviable point in your life, right? You've given yourself and your parents have given you a year or two to really be selfish. And I don't mean selfish in a pejorative way. To be selfish, right? To come to understand the Mamar of Hillel, right? Im ein ani li, mi li. If I don't get my stuff together, if I don't invest in who I am, who's going to invest in who I am? But Hillel was smart enough to invent a semicolon and put that at the end of that statement. It's not, that doesn't stand by itself. Because the next statement, Ukeshe ani la atzmi mo ani. But in defining who I am, if I'm only about me, what am I? And then another semicolon, and imlo achshav ematai. But don't say it's all going to be then. All this stuff that I'm thinking about, I have to actualize it now. Right? It doesn't contribute a lot to clarity, but maybe it does. Because the clarity is to say that things are not neat. They might be clear, but they're not neat. And that you've chosen, by the yeshiva you're in, by the students that you are, you've chosen a life that doesn't value clarity above all, but one of you used the term purpose. I think it values purpose above all. Right? That's why you're here. You're also not choosing to say, I'm in a place where when I figure myself out, it's only how can I go to the mirror and spend the next 55 years learning. Not that for those people for who choose to do it, or those who are uniquely talented, it's not something worth doing, but it's not the end point, because you believe in Lishmar Velasos. You believe that your life is supposed to have some meaning, at least for me. Maybe I'm projecting here, but I think we can also learn from Inyanei Deyoma in the Chumash that the same thing happens. I mean, what's the journey that we're on? What matters? What's important? Right. So when we encounter the patriarch of the Rabbeinu family, Moshe, and we meet him, we meet him. Right? The first way we meet him is it says, does it say that Moshe was born as the child of Amram the Magnificent and Yocheved the Beautiful? No, Vayetzei Ish mi Beis Levi, Vayikach Bas Levi. Right? He's the child of anonymous parents. Because they're not special people? Of course they're special people. But the lesson to us is, he's not Moshe because of who his parents were. He's Moshe because of who he was. And you can't say that you can't be a Moshe because you don't have the yichus that Moshe had. It was Ish mi Beis Levi. And it was Bas Levi. And the first lesson is, we all have the opportunity to be. And then to me, and I guess I want to share this with you, to me the great moment is when Moshe, prince of Egypt, leaves the palace and he sees the Egyptian smiting the Hebrew. I love saying that because I love the word smite, and when can you use the word smite in a sentence, right? Smiting the Hebrew. Right? And first of all, the Torah says, and he went out El Echav. And there's a whole dispute as to whether it's Moshe who thinks he's going out to his brothers, or if the narrator is telling us, in fact, he's going out to his brothers, but he doesn't know. Interesting. Although I hold that I can't imagine how Moshe, being raised and weaned by Yocheved, wasn't taught what his people were. But he goes out and hears this encounter, right? And then the Torah says, Moshe sees this, Vayifen ko v'cho v'yar ki ein ish. And he looks hither and yon. This is the other reason I like doing it. I get to say smite, and I get to say hither and yon. When do you say hither and yon, right? Vayifen ko v'cho, and he looked hither and yon, v'yar ki ein ish. And he sees that there's no man. And he goes ahead and smites the Egyptian. Okay, so what does it mean, Vayifen Ko V'cho? So people have different approaches, and the Mefarshim say different things. One is Kipshuto, he saw something going on, he didn't want to get in trouble, he looked hither and yon, he looked around, Vayifen Ko V'cho, Vayar Ki Ein Ish, he saw there was no one there, it was safe, and he did what he had to do. Okay, second understanding. Moshe's there, he sees this going on, he says, I'm Prince of Egypt, how can I get involved? Vayifen Ko V'cho, he says, somebody ought to do something about this. And he looks around, Vayar Ki Ein Ish, and there was no one around. And since he's Amram and Yocheved's child, he's already, of course, learned Pirkei Avot, and he knows that it says, "B'mkom she'ein anashim ishtadel yodish," in a place where there's no man, strive to be a man. So he looks around, he sees no one's there. He acts. He's a man who takes action. Interesting. So I like looking at it a third way, that this is a personal moment for Moshe, that this is a cathartic moment for Moshe. Here is Moshe, prince of Egypt, part of Bnei Israel, the clash. By the way, things that you live with every day, different elements of your character, different elements of your desires that are in different places, right? And here he is, and he sees something terrible, and it's that moment. Vayifan ko vacho vayar ki einish. He looks here and there in himself. Vayar ki einish. And says, "So who am I? If I see this, I'm looking into myself." Vayifan ko vacho vayar ki einish. And he decides. And he acts. And it's the beginning of his journey. Right? It's the beginning of his journey. We all are like Moshe. We all, only those who are asleep at the wheel, don't have those Moshe moments. Don't have those moments where they have to decide, who am I? When I ask what you want most, it's another way, who are we? And look, I'm 64 years old. Right? And Esther and I asked that question again and again. But I've confronted them, it's too late. I am who I am. Right? But I re-ask it. But I've had lots of times during my life and early on in my life where I ask that question, and I'll tell you, you're young enough that if you answer it one way and then you think you made a terrible mistake, you can still change. But it all influences you. But you're here. You've made a statement. Right? And I do know from my sons that while you're here, you get to ask a lot about yourself, about your Yiras Hashem, while you're also developing the skills to own Torah. I mean, among the many reasons I envy you, and I'm very happy with my life and have very few regrets, one of my real regrets, and you'll think it's an ad, is I didn't go to YU, because I did not have a happy high school experience, except for Rabbi Waxman's class. And wild horses couldn't get me to YU. Fortunately, I got very much back to YU while I was in college through extracurricular programs that brought me in. But I'm a high school educated Jew. I learn, I have chevrusas, I know a couple of things, I can hold my own. But as long as I live, the text is always going to be an obstacle that I have to push through to get to the context. I have to push through. All my six children, thank God, see the text as welcoming. You, by learning here, and of course by continuing at YU, will see the text as welcoming. It's your friend. It's not your adversary. And it opens up unbelievable avenues of exploration and of consolation and of guiding and of provocation and even of the search for clarity. But as we grow older, clarity becomes technicolor. It's not monochromatic. Right? And we learn, I think, as the Jews that we are, we learn to worship nuance. Okay, and I think Moshe struggled with who am I and how am I going to resolve it, but you don't always resolve it saying, okay, I know, now I'm here and I'm not there. So I wear a little pin here, which is the alma mater of Yeshiva University, what its theme is. And you know, the theme of Yeshiva University is Torah Umada. It's Torah Umada. A little bit, I have trouble with it, because it seems very clear. There's Torah, there's Mada, and right at the spine, there's the U. So what do we really believe in? We believe in U. It doesn't make for good speech, by the way. So it's certainly true that we believe that Torah is the core of our existence. It's certainly true that we believe that's very true. But we also believe that through the lens of Torah, we embrace God's other wisdoms and the wisdom of man. We embrace arts and science, and we embrace commerce and culture, and poetry and prose. And we use that as a gift to build a life that works for us. Okay? But I have to tell you, clarity can be gotten in other ways. It can be done by rejecting Torah. Right? It can be done by rejecting Mada. It's much clearer. I can make Yiddishkeit much clearer for you guys. Okay, there are a lot of people who have a much clearer Yiddishkeit. It's right here. And don't ask. Or if you want to ask, ask someone, and then it's just that, and the rest of the world is corrupt, which often it is. And ignore it, because you can't make a difference. And wall yourself off. Now, I have to tell you, I have respect for those people. They live a consistent life, and they're certainly observing Torah, doing chesed in their communities, and their theory is that in doing that, they will be Am HaNivchar, and in the zechus of that, the Mashiach will come for the whole world. I wasn't raised that way. I don't read Torah that way. I don't see Avram and Sarah living that way. I don't see our charge. I don't see our covenant. I don't see our covenant. I'll tell you a quick story. I'm wandering around a little bit, but I have a friend, Joe McShane, Father Joseph McShane, who's the president of Fordham University. He's a Jesuit priest. He's a philo Semite, and he loves it when I take him to kosher restaurants for lunch. He loves it. He also has some misapprehensions. He thinks everybody who works at a kosher restaurant is Jewish. So I've been in very interesting conversations with him where he's inquiring of a Hispanic waiter, you know, whether he's Orthodox or not. And then right away he finds out he's Catholic, and then he starts talking to him about what parish he's in. But Joe's a very interesting man, and he had lunch with me at Yeshiva several years back, and he wanted to visit the Beis Medrash. In those days, we had multiple Batei Medrash, but not as many as we have now, and we didn't have the Gluck Beit Medrash, which is the main one. So I took him to the main building of Yeshiva, where MTA is, and I took him into the Beis Medrash. And like many people of God who might not be Jewish, walking into the Beis Medrash is an unbelievable experience, because they see the presence of sanctity in the midst of chaos. Because there's no tradition in the Catholic Church where you have lay people who are learned. If you're really going to be learned, right, you're going to be a priest. Here you walk in and there are hundreds of young people who are going to be lawyers and doctors and this and that, and they're poring over ancient texts, number one. Number two, they're doing it with each other. Number three, they're arguing about it because they own it. It's theirs. So he walked out of that Beis Medrash, tears coming down his face. Okay? And we walked out of the building, and right outside the building there's a bench, and sitting on the bench are three freshmen from MTA looking particularly unhappy. So Richard, always wanting to fix everything, goes over to them and says, "Hi fellas, everything okay?" They look at me like I'm interrupting them, of course, and they look and they say, "No, we missed our bus." I said, "Well, where do you live?" So one was Holliswood, and one was Hillcrest, and one was Jamaica States. It's that Queens bus. And I said, "Well, can I help you?" And they said, "No, they're ordering another bus." So I figured it was a nice moment. I said, "Hi, my name is Richard Joel. I'm president of Yeshiva. I work for you." I said, "Let me introduce you to my friend, Father Joseph McShane, the president of Fordham University." Now they're looking at me with daggers in their eyes, like, what am I doing to them? And he looks at them and says, "Shalom!" They look at me saying, "Why are you doing this?" I said, "Say shalom." They say, "Shalom." Then he's not to be deterred. He said, "Do you boys speak Hebrew?" Now they're turning to each other and saying, "Why didn't I go to Hafter? What am I doing here?" Right? I said, "Please answer." I say, "Yes, yes, yes." Then Father McShane turns to them and says, "Biblical or modern?" And I said, "We have to go, fellas." And I took him and I started walking away with him. And they benched Gomel. And as we're walking, about 25 feet after we go, he stops. And he said, "Richard, I made a terrible mistake. I have to go back." I said, "Okay." So he runs back to the boys, who thought they had escaped with their lives. And he turns to me and says, "Boys," he said, "I forgot to tell you something very important. You must listen to me, boys. You must listen to me." He says, "You must keep the covenant alive." Silent for a minute. He says, "Did you hear me? You must keep the covenant alive. And don't miss the bus again." And walked away. And now I'm in tears, because here is this Jesuit priest, president of a great Catholic university, turning to my three young boys in yeshiva and saying that they have to keep the covenant alive.
He said, Richard, you don't understand. Our being has no purpose if our older brothers are not maintaining the covenant with God. If the Jews don't keep the covenant with God, you know, we don't get to do our thing. Now, without having a theological discussion, what was clear to me was that most Jews don't understand what this priest from the Bronx understands. That core to what we are, and we don't use the language that way, core to what we are in deciding to go left or right, is we have this covenant. We are children of a Brit. I was thinking of, and the covenant is referred to so many ways, but I was just looking in Yisro, because I know it's coming up, and it's several of the psukim that I love the most. The statement of the Bris, I mean, B'nai Israel leaves Mitzrayim, they're at Har Sinai. They're at Har Sinai. Okay, in Yisro Yud Tes. It says, Moshe Allah El Elokim, Moshe goes up the mountain, Vayikra elav Hashem min ha-har lemar. And God calls to him from the mountain, saying, Ko somar leves Yaakov, thus you should say to the women, V'tagid levnei Yisrael, and you should speak to the men, and you say the following, Atem re'isem asher asisi leMitzrayim. You saw what I did to Egypt. V'esa eschem al kanfei nisharim. And I brought you out on the wings of eagles. And I've brought you to me. The Ata, and now, Im Shamoa Tishma'u Bekoli, if you listen to my voice, Ushmartem et Brisi, and you observe our covenant, my covenant, the Hayisem Li Segula Mikolo Amim Kilikola Aretz, I translate it, and you make yourself chosen to me, because the whole world is mine. If you make yourself, if you choose me, if you are the choosing people, right? If you do that, what's a covenant? It's a bargain, right? It's a contract. What's the other side? Ve'atem tiyu li mamleches kohanim v'goy kadosh. Then you get to be a kingdom of priests and a holy people. Here's the deal. This is what McShane knew. We get to have a privileged relationship. It's a relationship of freedom, which means it's a relationship of responsibility. If we listen to his voice, if we do his mitzvahs, if we choose ourselves to be God's people, then the gift is we get to be Kodesh. We get to have a life that's elevated, and we get to be Or LaGoyim. We get to partner with God to be Makadesh the whole, right, and to make a difference in the world. To me, that's the covenant. To me, and it's not about others. I mean, I could have made a difference in the world once Esther allowed me to love her. And we created a family, right, that was warm, that had values. And I can make a difference by embracing nuance. Torah Umada requires that there's not the answer, but that we work at life. One of the reasons there aren't that many Jews who are, quote, contemporary Orthodox Jews. It's hard. It's not clear. It's not just Frege Shilin, you'll get an answer. We struggle with what's the right way. Vayifen kovacho, we do it all the time. But we think that's our gift from God. But what a gift that is. And to see six children, four children-in-law, seven grandchildren. Please God, number eight in Cleveland in April. And it's unbelievable. And in that way, you know what? I mattered. The world's going to go on. And I even know with my children, right, Esther and I kind of modeled a home of joy and Torah where they have it too. And God's rewarded me by giving Esther and me opportunities to work with other Jews, to have them be part of our broad family, to have them look outward, that I get to be steward at Yeshiva University, and not only is there learning that matches any great yeshiva in the world, and not only is there academics that have great strength and give you all kinds of possibilities, but it's an environment of shleimut, it's an environment of integrity, it's an environment where the pieces come together in you, and you get to go and build the world.
whether it's through chesed, or whether it's through business, or whatever it is. What's important? What matters to us? What matters to us is love. You're right. Who said love? Love, Ava. What's Ava? So much of what we do, by the way, it's half of the equation. The other half is yira, awe. Right? To live a life of love and a life of awe is to be on a wonderful journey together. And we get to do it. So I don't want to preach to you. I didn't want to speak to you that long. I think that we are at wonderful weeks where you can really look deeply into the Torah and see our journey. Me'avdus l'cheiros, to recognize that cheiros doesn't mean sitting back and getting entitlements, but the ultimate cheiros is to take responsibility, to stand at Sinai, to say Naseh v'nishma, to build a life of values, and to matter in the world. Right? And to know who you are, and to know what matters, and to work on it, and to see what shleimut is. I mean, look, I like shleimut. I think shleimut is the definition of Torah umada. We have many pieces to us, and we have to work to make them fit, and then we're whole. So many of our brachot talk about shalom, right? Shalom, we define as peace, but shalom doesn't mean the absence of war. If I'm not hitting you, you have shalom. Shalom means shalem. We have peace when all our pieces fit together, when we're whole, when it works as individuals, as a community, as a world. And that's the blessing that God gives us. So there's my message today. I've been talking to you about nothing but continuing your learning at Yeshiva University. But I also need to say that some of you are not going to do that. But that doesn't mean that you're going to be any lesser, or you're not going to make the same right choices, or you're not going to build your lives carefully. But I will say that you have special obligations to yourself if you're not going to do that. Make a contract. Write it down. Make a contract with yourself before you go off to college. Because college is not a bad place. It's just the culture of the university now is very inimical to the values that we hold dear. That's why you need to have a great Hillel that you go to. But understand, none of you are going to go to the University of Hillel. Right? It's a retreat. But if you go, write down and put it away and check it from time to time the following things. Number one, what are your non-negotiables? What will you never do or not do? Okay? What are your boundaries? Because it's going to be pushed every way. You have to understand, we believe in community. Campus believes in individual. We believe in discipline. Campus believes in if it feels good, do it. We believe in a certain space, in a certain sanctity of space. Kedushas HaGuf. Right? The campus believes in casual intimacy. Okay? We believe in a derech. Campus is anti-Orthodox, not anti-Orthodox Jew, anti-Orthodoxy. Right? There are lots of truths. One can't be better than the other. Try everything. Don't be too tied down. Right? Now, we can believe that there are other people who have their truths or their values, but you can't force me to say that my truth is not truth and that theirs is. So you have to make sure you have a community and have friends who share your visions. Know that there are non-negotiables. Right? You're good enough to make the basketball team. Understand what that means in terms of when games are played and what you're going to do. Asei lecha rav, who's your rav? Who are you going to speak to? What books are you going to read? Write them down. Chaveya itim l'torah. How much time? Because whatever you write down, you're going to do less. But how much time are you going to put in? And then finish it off by saying periodically, Vayifen kova chove yarki enish. Look at yourself and say, is this who I want to be? As a graduate of NYU, I can tell you with a little bit of luck and siyata d'shmaya, you can do okay. But I also have to say that if you think about it, right, to be in a place of shlemut, where you get to grow, where you get to be with the world, to be a part of the world, and to be apart from the world, right? There's no place like Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzhak Elchanan. We certainly have people here all the time who are happy to talk to you. I would never want any of you who've made other choices to think they're the wrong choices. You're the only one who can decide the right choice. Some guy standing in front of you can't do that. Okay? But remember how high the stakes are for you to make sure that you know who's in there. You know Vayifen Kovacho. There's a story told, actually it was told to me by a conservative rabbi, Rabbi David Wolpe from Los Angeles, who's very good at stories. And he tells the story of a little kid who goes running through his house, through the kitchen, past his parent, out onto the porch, over the porch into the backyard, through the backyard into the woods behind the house. The kid comes back in, the parent looks at him and says, what did you just do? He said, I went out to the woods to be with God. Okay. Next day, parent sees the kid do the same thing. Through the house, through the kitchen, through the porch, through the backyard, into the woods, comes back. Parent says, what are you doing? He said, I told you yesterday, I'm going out into the woods to be with God. Happens a third time, a fourth time, a fifth time. Finally, the parent can't stand it anymore. He's like, what is it that you're doing? He says, I told you, I'm going out into the woods to be with God. Parent says, but my child, don't you know? God's the same everywhere. Kid says, yeah, I know, but I'm not. But I'm not. We all need to find our places, our woods, right, where we can be ourself with God, where we allow ourselves that sacred space. And please God, as we get more shalem, we find that space more around us. Because it isn't in the woods, right? It's here. It's within us to know it, to do it. It's within the Torah, right? But give yourself that special place where you get to be alone with your Creator. And there's no better place than here to be able to find that space. If you're having a hard time, go to your Rabbeim. They won't take you there. They'll point you there. And you need that. So please God, my bracha for all of you is that you help not just yourselves and those you love and those you touch, but the whole world find that space. And together we can move on to a better and a better world that you will build with my children and your children will build with my grandchildren. Thank you very much.
Oh my God, of course you're Ari's son. Yeah.